Good morning to you. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up this hour, we're going to be taking an amazing journey with the food we eat as Sarah Murray, author, transports us around the world, back in time, and on things like salmon boats as we learn how salmon gets shipped from Norway to China and then on to the United States. That will be coming up this hour as we talk with Sarah Murray, author of the book Movable Feasts, From Ancient Rome to the 21st Century, The Incredible Journeys of the Foods We Eat. It is our winter membership drive, and we're back with you to talk about that. We are this hour looking for a fresh goal. It is a fresh hour, and we have a goal of $9,000 that we're hoping to raise this hour, and we can make it with your help. It takes one phone call to begin it, and we go from there with your help at 1-800-383-9772. I know you're really going to enjoy this next hour, so go ahead and pledge in advance. You can sit back, put your feet up, and just enjoy the rest of the hour. But get that call in right away at 1-800-383-9772.
It's really important that you do participate in public radio because we are listener supported, and we're actually member supported because not all of our listeners, believe it or not, are members of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet, but you can help improve that situation. And we will welcome you to the membership of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, when you call 1-800-383-9772, the volunteers in the studio are members. They would love to, in fact, they love to get phone calls because otherwise they're sitting there drinking coffee, and they'll welcome you into the membership. It's a very pleasant proposition. You can also use the computer, and WPR.org is very quick, and you won't miss any of the interview. You can kind of do it on your own time and give us your comments and what you like and don't like about Wisconsin Public Radio, and we'll take a look at those too. But we do have a kind of a nice thank you gift here if you pledge $150, and that's a book called The Movable Feast A Movable Feast. No, Movable Feasts. Thank you very much.
You're
by
welcome.
Sarah Murray, who's coming up to be with us in just a few minutes. And that's our way of saying thank you. You also, if you pledge $150, receive the member benefit card. That's also thrown in for every member at $120 and above. So, you know, those are some ways of saying thank you. But the main way that, of course, that we do say thank you is with the programming that your pledge makes possible. 1-800-383-9772. This is it. This is the time to do it. It's Monday. Start your week off on a good footing.
800-383-9772. You can use Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express. You can pay it all at once. You can pay it in monthly installments. We can send you a statement. You can write us a check. You can use electronic funds transfer. You know, once you make the decision to make the pledge, the rest of it is easy. Just takes a couple of minutes and you're back to whatever you were doing. WPR.org is our secure web server. It saves us money when you pledge online, and it also saves paper. So those are two good things. The best thing, though, is when you do make that decision to make the pledge of support for the programming that you enjoy. You're listening right now because you love public radio. You enjoy listening to the talk. You enjoy being able to interact with guests about a variety of topics. You enjoy maybe just listening to our guests and hosts and callers discuss the issues of the day, and you learn a lot and you are entertained. Well, those are all great reasons why you should go and support the programming you value by giving us a call at 800-383-9772 or securely online at WPR.org. Think about it this way. It's like going to school, only there are no books to buy, no tests to take. Let's see.
You can do it in your car.
That's right. And you get this free education. There's no degree at the other end, but it's like going to school without all the bad parts. You know, it's recess whenever you want it. So that's one way to look at this. This is part of the Wisconsin idea of making the borders of the university the borders of the state. We're walking the walk and talking the talk here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and it's time for you to help out. 800-383-9772.
And speaking of education, John, it's really a Renaissance-style education. It's not as though there are six subjects that you have to have every day. We really run the gamut here. We've got medicine, food, the arts, science, politics, economics.
We have at least 10 subjects a day.
We have at least 10. And I'm guessing many more than that over the course of a year. You're looking at hundreds or thousands of subjects there that we cover for you. And you can pick and choose according to your interests, what you really get involved in. If you love this hour, which I'm pretty sure you will, it's called Movable Feast, the book, as we look at the amazing journeys of the food we eat, then you'll want to decide to say thank you to us with a pledge of $150. If you pledge it, when you pledge it that one, I should say, because I have a feeling you're going to, we'll be happy to send you out a thank you gift of Movable Feast, the book by Sarah Murray. So $150, that's $12.50 a month. Can you afford that? Well, if you can, we'd be happy to have your pledge this morning. And no matter what you decide to pledge, we're so grateful that you've decided to become a member, and we're so happy to have you in the fold. So won't you call us this morning and give us that call at 1-800-383-9772.
Andrea and Peter called from Marinette, and they've been listening for 30 years, and their daughter began listening at the age of 3. If you've been listening for, well, maybe more than a year,
ten minutes,
yeah. But maybe 30 years, and never been a member, consider a gift of $500. You can break that into monthly or quarterly payments, as I do, for example, and that spreads it out over the course of a year. And a $500 gift will go a long way toward making Wisconsin Public Radio as strong and as good at it as it is. And you know, if you've lived in another state, if you've listened to other public radio stations, most people tell us, you know, we've really got something special here in Wisconsin, and we do, and we shouldn't take it for granted, because we are one of the best, if not the best, and it's because of you. It's because of members like you. It's because Wisconsin cares enough about its public radio to support it. 1-800-383-9772, 1-800-383-9772.
Well, we have that $9,000 goal to meet this hour, and what's the big deal about these goals? Well, the goals, hour by hour, day by day, that's what keeps us on track toward making our budget at the end of the year. This is a nonprofit organization, and that also means non-loss. We're supposed to break even at the end of June, and that's why we do these pledge drives, because this is our best way of coming to you, the people who use the service, and talking to you about the need. It's not we're asking you to help us to become our partner in creating the radio that you love. You'll be part of the team, and in fact, you're the most important part, because member income accounts for over 30%. Of what it takes to keep this operation solvent. And so when we say you're the key player here, we're not blowing smoke. This is the absolute truth. We need you to go to the phone right now and call us at 800-383-9772, or go online and make a pledge at WPR.org.
We've been talking with Phil Corvo and John Munson about our winter membership drive. Thank you both, and we'll be talking to you more later this hour. Again, you can get your pledge in now as we listen to Sarah Murray, the author of Movable Feast. The number to call to get your pledge in to become a member is 1-800-383-9772. And don't forget, when you decide to pledge at the $150 level, we're happy to send you a thank you gift of Sarah Murray's book, Movable Feast. We're all trying to get informed these days about what we eat, what we put into our bodies, and what's in the environment around us. And this will be a fascinating look at what happens with our food, the average food that we put in our grocery cart once a week. So something to think about there as you call 1-800-383-9772, or you can pledge online at WPR.org. Well, an average trip to the grocery store might seem anything but ordinary if you could read the miles logged by each item before it hit your shopping cart. Take salmon. Who knew that the longest journey of the salmon takes place after it's caught? Well, this hour we're talking with Sarah Murray. She's the author of the book Movable Feasts, From Ancient Rome to the 21st Century, The Incredible Journeys of the Food We Eat. You're invited to call in this hour with your questions for Sarah Murray and some stories of your own. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And Sarah Murray, thank you so much for joining us this hour.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Can you tell me how you got interested in writing a book about the journeys that our food takes?
Well, I was it sort of came to me in a strange way, rather, actually. I was actually working in Vietnam on a magazine, and we were looking for photographs of global trade. So I decided to head down to the docks and look at a shipping container and take some photographs of them. And I remember seeing the back of one of those being opened up and some food being taken out, and I suddenly thought, my goodness, that's how so much of what we eat gets moved around, and we really don't think about where it's been or where it's come from, you know, and I just thought how fascinating to look a bit deeper.
And speaking of shipping containers, they are not unremarkable in themselves, as you find out in your book. They've been revolutionized, and they've become incredibly efficient at doing what they do. Can you tell us a little bit about the packages that our food is shipped in?
Yes. Well, I mean, what started as a very simple metal box for shipping things around in is now a sort of, you know, super high-tech transport container with, you know, temperature regulation, and you can even monitor your goods remotely by satellite to make sure they're not getting too hot on the way back from somewhere. Really you can transport almost anything. It used to be that you really couldn't get things like even avocados, but I think now the technology is getting so sophisticated that even these very delicate goods can be transported.
And these containers, they were the invention of someone who noticed that, you know, they could be easier if they were sort of movable from vehicle to vehicle, right?
That's right. Malcolm McLean, who was he was actually a truck driver from North Carolina. He was looking one day at some of the goods that were being loaded onto a ship from his trucks. And, you know, he just realized that actually, rather than, you know, packing all these separate lumpy objects in sacks and different shaped boxes and things like that, it would be a whole lot easier if you had these standardized boxes. And, you know, that really, I think, is what sort of actually revolutionized world trade. I mean, there are lots of factors behind globalization, but without that very efficient, simple box that could go from a ship to a truck to a train, I mean, it really speeded up the efficiency of how we can get everything from across the world.
And are they pretty much the standard the world over?
They are. There are variations, but the basic, there's a 40-foot and a 20-foot, and you pretty much know that that's going to fit any vehicle that you've got.
Well, I want to talk about salmon, because that's one of the foods in your book that makes one of the most amazing journeys. I mean, everybody has heard, as you say, about the journey of the salmon who swim upstream to spawn again, and then, of course, they die at the place where they were born. But after a salmon is caught, they have a pretty incredible journey ahead of them, right?
That's right. It's really to do with the fact that salmon are incredibly difficult to fillet. If you do it by machine, you waste a lot of the flesh, and if you do it by hand, certainly in North America, the costs are so high that it makes the salmon unaffordable. So what happens now is salmon is, like so many things, sent off to developing countries where the wages are lower. And they can be filleted by hand, and then they're refrozen and sent all the way back again. It's an incredible journey.
And you've actually visited their factories where they fillet the salmon by hand in China. What did you see there?
I didn't actually go to one myself, but I'd seen pictures of this, mm-hmm. and you know, I mean, they're huge sort of industrial size warehouses with you know, people with you know, gloves and hats, all just they use little tweezers to pick out the bones.
And it sounds as though it's mostly done by women.
It seems to be, yes. I guess maybe the men are doing the sort of heavy lifting jobs.
And then the salmon gets refrozen and then shipped back where it's going. So actually by the time it reaches the shelves, has it been frozen twice?
It has, actually, which was something that when I first thought, I thought, well, isn't that bad? Aren't we going to all get poisoned? And I looked into it and I found that it is actually safe. I mean, you do lose a lot of quality. But interestingly enough, I was listening to a couple of chefs talking once, and they were saying you can actually, if you freeze fish instantly that it's caught, there's almost no loss of quality. And in fact, if you think about it, you know, most of the fish that we actually eat is frozen because, you know, unless you live right by the harbor, it would simply deteriorate by the time it got to you.
Well, a couple of questions I have are, one, how could this possibly be efficient to ship fish from, say, Norway to China and then back to Norway or the United States, for instance? And, you know, also, is this fish being sold to us as fresh fish?
I often see signs in shops saying fresh fish, and it always makes me laugh because I think, well, yes, but it's frozen. It was freshly frozen, though, so as long as it's freshly frozen, you're okay. But you know, really, fish starts deteriorating within you know, minutes of it being caught. So you actually would not want to eat it. You know, if you're living in the middle of America, you would actually not want to be eating fish that was not frozen at some point. But then, going to the sort of efficiency side of it, yeah, it's you know, it's in the same way as a lot of our clothes are now made in developing countries. It's simply that the shipping costs are a relatively small amount of the cost of your overall product, and so actually it's the labor costs that the companies are looking to.
Well, then the other million-dollar question in this day and age is, what about the carbon output of having a giant ocean-going vessel ship your fish all the way to China? That can't be good for the environment.
Well, it's not good for the environment, but, you know, compared to a lot of things, a ship is an incredibly efficient form of transportation. And I think, you know, there's been a lot talked about food miles, and I think people sort of assume that the further it's gone, the worse it is for the environment. And that's not actually necessarily true. I mean, if it's been shipped by plane, then that is pretty damaging to the environment. But a lot of food, not that much food, is shipped by plane simply because it's too expensive. If you're talking about a shipping container, it's really pretty, you know, per pound of food carried, it's pretty efficient. I mean, a 20-foot shipping container, which is the smaller version, could in theory be able to carry about 48,000 bananas. So that's quite a lot of bananas, and that's just in one shipping container. Now, the biggest ships today carry between 8,000 and 11,000 shipping containers. So, you know, if you think of that, per pound of food carried, it's a hell of a lot more efficient than you driving to the supermarket and in your SUV to buy, you know, one branch of bananas.
Well, we're talking this hour with Sarah Murray. She's the author of Movable Feasts, From Ancient Rome to the 21st Century, The Incredible Journeys of the Food We Eat. If you have a question for Sarah Murray, or you'd like to ask about a particular food or something we're talking about with salmon, for instance, why don't you give us a call this morning? We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, keeping you company today for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There's a lot still to come today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 3 o'clock, it's Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. As Jean asks, how is the race for the White House being covered abroad, and which candidate is most likely to restore our tarnished image? After 3 on Here on Earth, Jean Faraca and her guests examine international media coverage of the 2008 presidential race. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking with Sarah Murray this hour. She's the author of Movable Feasts, From Ancient Rome to the 21st Century, The Incredible Journeys of the Food We Eat. And a reminder that we are offering Sarah Murray's book as a thank you gift to you when you pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, when you become a member at the $150 level. That breaks down to about $12.50 a month, and we'd be thrilled to send that out to you and to receive your support of programs just like this one on Wisconsin Public Radio. And Sarah Murray, we were talking about salmon before we went for the break, and you were arguing that it was pretty efficient, even though it seems inefficient to ship fish across the globe to be deboned in this case. Have you actually crunched the numbers? Does it actually come out to be a more efficient process than it would maybe, say, to do it in Norway and then ship it over?
I haven't crunched the numbers, but you can be certain that the companies doing it have. And if it was going to be a lot more expensive, they would not be doing it in China.
And I want to ask you about the history of moving food. It seems as though when we think about it, we think about something like the salmon, like we're talking about. They're caught in Norway, shipped to China, and then moved over. That sounds as though something that's clearly a product of our day. What about ancient times? How long has this sort of transporting of food been going on?
Well, what I found fascinating when I was researching this book was that, I was looking at our incredible global diets that we have today. But when I started looking back, I found that actually that's not such a new thing. In the first and second centuries in Rome, Romans ate an incredibly global diet. They had grain that came from Egypt. They had preserved fruits from Syria. They had even apples and pears from up in the Apennines. And I think they even had spices from places like India, China, and Africa. They've actually discovered remnants of spices in some of the pots in Rome that they believe came from that far off.
And these voyages where they moved food around, they had a special vessel in ancient Rome that they used, didn't they?
That's right. Well, the shipping container of the Roman era was the was called an amphora, and it was a great big ceramic pot about the size of a sort of small barrel. It was very well designed because it was curved to sort of fit the side of the ship. And it had a pointed base, so you didn't stand it up. You decanted it into something else as soon as it arrived. But that point served as a sort of third handle as you were decanting the oil. And that was a pretty efficient container. I mean, in the first and second centuries, it's estimated that the Romans shipped about 1.6 billion gallons of olive oil in pots from southern Spain to Italy. Now, that's about the same amount of liquid that you would generate by flushing a toilet once a second for 32 years. So that was quite a lot of olive oil.
Now, these amphora, are they still around? Have you seen them?
Well, I went on the fascinating archaeological dig in Rome. In fact, there's a hill in Rome called Monte Testaccio, and it's fairly near the center, and people drive past it, and there's some nice little restaurants clustering around the base of it. But what a lot of people don't realize is that entire hill is made out of broken Roman amphora. It's essentially what was a huge, great rubbish dump in the first and second centuries, because they were shipping so much olive oil that they had to get rid of these vessels somehow, and they were all broken up and well-ordered way packed. And over the centuries, it just created a huge hill of pots.
Oh, that's fascinating. So you've actually gotten to see the shards and...
Yes, well, what's amazing is they go once a year. There's a dig up there, one of which I went on, and they dig a sort of 3-meter by 3-meter hole in the top of the hill. And once you get through the topsoil, you look down, and there's no earth or dirt or anything. It's just pots. And, it's rather like the rings of the tree. The archaeologists were saying to me, oh, yes, we've got down to the lair, which is the reign of Marcus Aurelius now.
That's
and,
pretty extraordinary.
And what's amazing, actually, is that these shards have all kinds of markings on them. And they you can tell where the pot originally came from, who was the dealer, who was the customs guy who stamped it when it arrived, what date it left Spain. And actually what's so fascinating is it's quite similar to the information on the back of a modern shipping container.
That sounds pretty sophisticated, actually.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, this hill is like a sort of giant economic sort of history book, actually, because, when they find shards from one particular olive oil estate in Spain with the name of the senator on it, and if there's a lot in one particular area and what they've identified as one particular year, they can say, well, hey, this guy was having a good year with his olives.
Wow, so you can really sort of trace the agricultural seasons and how successful they were.
Absolutely.
One of the anecdotes in your book that I found pretty interesting was an ancient jar of fish paste that turned up in the British Isles.
That's right. It was found in Wales, and I think there were still traces of fish paste itself, which bears testament to perhaps what preservatives they must have put in it. Fish paste was another thing that was shipped around in these amphora. It was a very stinky kind of paste that they added to lots of different foods. And again, it's just evidence, really, that, across the Roman Empire, food was being transported all over the place.
I gather that one of your favorite stories that you researched for this book is the story of the Allied food drops to Berlin.
Yes, that was an amazing story. That was after the Second World War, and basically Berlin, which was then divided up between the Russians, the French, the Americans, and the British, was surrounded by Stalin, who wanted to control Berlin. Now, the Allies, realized that Berlin was absolutely a key strategic city to hang on to. And so, they were wondering how on earth they were going to feed. It was something like nearly 2.5 million people living in West Berlin. The only route in, once Stalin had closed all the land routes, were these three air corridors, and the generals got together and said, well, listen, this is the only way we're going to fly food in, and as well as some other supplies, fuel and medical supplies and things like that. And, people simply said it could not be done. They said it would, it would collapse after a number of weeks, but it was the only solution, and they were absolutely determined. And, in fact, the airlift was so successful that it went on for more than a year, and Stalin eventually backed down.
Well, that must have been a hugely revolutionary idea at the time. Nowadays, we think about dropping food as something which is a pretty standard option when you're looking at that kind of situation. But back in the day that we're talking about, it must have been pretty revolutionary.
It was something people simply didn't think could be done, and they had to requisition all kinds of aircraft from all over the world and rip the passenger seats out and hang cargo hooks in them and retrain all the pilots that had sort of retired after the war. The other thing that was extraordinary about it was that they had to establish a way of getting planes to arrive in huge numbers. Now, I mean, if you think today's airports are crowded, you had planes arriving and taking off every 3 minutes in Berlin. Wow. And in order to do this, they had to set up really a sort of air corridor. So when the pilots arrived, it was quite a difficult landing. Now, if you missed your landing or you were delayed, you couldn't, as you do today, just hover around in the airspace, because it just led to these huge, great pileups. And in fact, there was an accident one day, and they said we just can't do this anymore. If you missed your landing, you would then have to turn around and go all the way back again and just start again. And so, if you can imagine, it was just like a sort of huge conveyor belt in the sky of planes arriving with food.
And you have an interview there with a woman who remembers that, and she talks about how incredible, at first it was these planes buzzing overhead constantly, but she said eventually she got to the point where she just started noticing it when she didn't hear them, because then you worried.
Absolutely. I mean, the sound of silence, in 1948 in Berlin was a very dangerous one, because it meant that there was no supplies arriving. Fortunately, that didn't happen too often.
You find this story moving. You say so in the book, and I'm wondering what it is about this story that is so moving to you.
Well, I think it's just that that sense of human endeavor in it. In a really tight spot, when everybody said something just couldn't be done, it could be done, and the teamwork was absolutely astonishing. The guy that ran it was an American general, William Tunner. And, he's kind of whipped up all kinds of competitive team spirits between the different unloading teams. And, cigarettes were the or chocolate and candy were the kind of prizes. And, he every single little detail to get that thing more efficient, he would notice. So, for example, he noticed one day that, the pilots were arriving, were running down to the cafeteria to grab a coffee and a donut and run back again. And he, even though that was only a matter of, half a minute or whatever, he just thought, well, we can do away with that. So he developed these whole mobile snack bars that as soon as a plane would touch ground, would roll up to the planes with a supply of hot coffee and donuts. And so the pilots didn't even have to leave their planes.
It sounds like it must have been an incredible operation to be a part of.
Yes, and I think what was so amazing was this was really the first Cold War battle. It was really the first kind of hunkering down of Russia versus the West. And it was a very, very critical, tactical battle to win. And it was a battle that was won entirely without a shot being fired, but with just food being moved.
I should jump in here and say that we do have a couple of open lines, so if you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling 1-800-642-1234. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. And tell us if you think about where your food comes from and if there are particular foods you're especially interested in. Maybe you have some recollections about the fish that you've eaten or the fruit that's on your table, especially in a Wisconsin winter. That number is 1-800-642-1234. And Sarah Murray, you actually had the opportunity to go on a food drop. Obviously, you were several decades too late for the Allied food drop in Berlin, but you did manage to go on a different kind of food drop. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I went on a food drop from Kenya into South Sudan, and it was with the World Food Program, which had been running airdrops there for a couple of decades, actually. They're sort of coming to an end now, but it was at one point when the fighting was raging on the ground down there, it was the only way of getting food into that part of the world. Plus, you had terrible conditions on the ground with, in the rainy season, the roads just became completely impossible. And so what happens is, this is slightly different from the Berlin airlift. In the Berlin airlift, they were actually landing on an airport. The whole thing about a food drop is, it's a way of delivering food when you cannot actually land, whether that's because of the terrain or whether that's because there's simply a battle raging on the ground. So I went up to northern Kenya and got in an old 1960s Antonov plane, which is an old, actually Cold War era plane, which are particularly, well designed for just this kind of operation. And you sit with 10 tons of sort of grain and essential foods in the back in sacks. And after about an hour and a half or something, we got to the village where we were dropping the food over. And this was the most incredible moment. There's a drop zone marked out on the ground with a big cross in it, so that the pilot can see where he's got to negotiate himself over. And then the guys in the back, loosen the chains and cut the ropes. And then suddenly they open the back doors, and you're just looking out of the back of the plane into the sky. And suddenly the back of the plane tips sharply down at an angle, and gravity just takes the sacks flying out of the back. It's one of the most incredible things I've ever seen.
Well, you were in the plane, and I can't completely imagine it, but it sounds to me like you were pretty much hanging from a hook on the wall.
I was, actually. I was hanging onto the side of a door and a large coat hook.
Were you terrified?
Well, fortunately, I'm quite a confident flyer. I wasn't too frightened, and I must say the whole thing was just so fascinating. I think that took away from any fear that I had.
Well, the thrill of having within your power to do something that positive must be pretty heady for the pilots and the people doing the food drop.
That's right. But the funny thing is, and what was very surprising to me about this, was all the people I met with the World Food Program were, dedicated. It's an incredible organization. And yet, when it comes to these are contracted pilots, and they were Russians, they didn't speak a word of English, so I couldn't really ask them about what they were doing. And you kind of got the feeling, they could be, it could be food one day and guns the next.
Mm. So kind of an interesting process there that maybe isn't always about the humanitarian aspects.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Well, we're talking this hour with Sarah Murray. She is the author of Movable Feasts, From Ancient Rome to the 21st Century, The Incredible Journeys of the Food We Eat. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. Coming up after 11 o'clock, stay tuned for Larry Mueller. He'll be giving you advice on dealing with neck pain in your neck and also various other aspects of the body, especially sports injuries, as he talks with therapists from the Sports Medicine Center. That's coming up after 11 o'clock today on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm back with you as we talk about the movement of our food. Movable Feasts is the title of the book, and we're talking with author Sarah Murray. And Sarah Murray, we have some folks on the line waiting to speak with you, so let's go ahead and this is a call from Sandy in Stoughton. Hi, Sandy, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
I've been studying about Herbert Hoover and how important his efforts to feed Europe after World War I and and so on and so forth. Do you cover any of that information?
When I was looking at the chapter on the Berlin airlift, I did look at the whole area of the care packages, which was a fascinating story. This was individuals in America who wanted to make food donations to Europe, and I think we often forget that after the war, you know, not just in Berlin, but a lot of Europe was actually starving. And these were incredible, and people would put together sort of peanut butter and, you know, I don't know what other sorts of food, sort of jams and tins of food, and you could go to a post office and you could send it either to a friend or a relative in Europe, or you could just address it to a hungry person in Europe, and, you know, hundreds of thousands of these packages were delivered, and some of them actually did go into the Berlin airlift.
Thank you so much for that call, Sandy. And let's take now a call from Kathy in Madison. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Missouri, I was curious. There's such a push on now for us to look locally to what we eat and how we shop. And I think, like some other people, I'm concerned that this is going to be a trend that passes after a while, after people, for one, become tired of spending a little bit more for their food and want to return us to spending a little bit less for that. In your opinion, is this something that we're going to see continue, the trend to eat locally and to eat things that have traveled less distances, or are we going to see the government and all of us keep on shipping things long distances?
Well, I think the thing that we have to remember is what we're all trying to do now, and I look at this as a journalist as well, is really kind of work out the best way of making everything that we consume much more sustainable. And what it turns out is that actually the transportation is not the worst offender when it comes to our food. As I mentioned, if you ship things by sea, it's actually an incredibly efficient way of transporting food in terms of its carbon footprint. What's interesting is that there was a study, for example, done in the UK on a packet of potato chips. And when they'd studied every aspect of the chain of the crisps, they found that actually the transportation was only 9% of it. What was really the largest impact was the processing. And part of the reason the processing was so high in terms of energy use was that potatoes are sold by weight and generally come very humidified. And so that takes a hell of a lot of frying. And so, you know, one thought was that, well, if we change the basis on which potatoes are traded, or if we, create incentives for farmers to draw out the water from potatoes before they're sold, that would have a huge impact on the energy used making a potato chip. So I think it's quite an interesting example to show that we can't just look at transportation. We've really got to take a much broader view of the sustainability of our food.
Would you say a good rule of thumb is to perhaps maybe buy locally when you can, but when you can't, just to choose the foods that maybe travel by sea, if we have any way of knowing that?
Definitely choose foods that have traveled by sea. Air transport is by far the most damaging. Rail is relatively efficient. But the thing to remember most of all is that it's usually the last mile that, in terms of per pound of food carried, is the most damaging. So if you drive to the supermarket in a very large car to buy one small item of food, that is going to be by far the most damaging aspect of that food's journey. So the idea really would be ideally to walk or cycle to the supermarket, and ideally to, if you're in a car, to pack it, with enough supplies to keep you going for 3 months.
Well, Sarah Murray, you must look at the food on your table completely differently, having written this book. Is there a food that you look at now that blows you away in terms of the journey that it's taken?
Certainly, I look at salmon a little differently. some of the transportation that is very damaging is actually the shorter journeys where food is kind of shifted around from different factories for different processes and packaging and all kinds of different things. So I actually try to avoid processed food. I mean, partly for health reasons as well, but partly also because that is the food that really has, whose journeys are perhaps more damaging than, a pineapple from Africa. If it's come by a ship, that's actually, not so damaging.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us. It's been a fascinating hour.
Well, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, take care. We'll be looking at our food a bit differently next time we go grocery shopping, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Bye.
Sarah Murray is the author of Movable Feasts, From Ancient Rome to the 21st Century, The Incredible Journeys of the Food We Eat. And her book can be yours when you pledge at $150 during our winter membership drive this hour only. So lots more to discover in that book. There's fascinating facts about bananas and about the aging of wine, how sailors used to just take it out for a joyride, basically, so its flavor improved, and now we have more efficient ways of doing that. But there's tons of fascinating facts in the book and a great read there. And not only do you get the book, of course, as a thank you when you support Wisconsin Public Radio, but you really get the great feeling that goes along with becoming a member of Wisconsin Public Radio and doing the right thing to support the programming that you listen to and that you love. The number to call is 1-800-383-9772. And I'm joined in the studio now by Phil Corvo and John Munson. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, Veronica. Well, we have a $9,000 goal during this hour, and we're at $240. So we've had three calls so far, and we need to hear from a lot more people during this hour. We know that a lot of people listen to this hour, enjoy programs like Kathleen Dunn and Ben Marin's in the afternoons, and Joy Cardine in the mornings, and Larry Mueller coming up in a few minutes. If you enjoy these programs, because you enjoy these programs, you should give us a call at 1-800-383-9772. Pledge $150 and receive that book that Veronica was just talking about. It's called Movable Feasts by Sarah Murray, and it's a fascinating book. It's one of our ways of saying thank you when you do call. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
800-383-9772, that's the number to call. WPR.org is our secure online place to pledge. It's fast. It's easy. As we've been saying all along, the tough part of this is you making the decision to make the pledge in the first place. But here's how this works. I'll construct a little syllogism. This is public radio, so we can do this, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Syllogisms.
Fine. Skip it. The fact is, you listen because you like the programming. Why would you listen if you didn't like the programming? Of course, that's a silly thing to say. But you listen because you like the programming. You keep listening because we keep giving you program you like. And the way this works is that you need to ensure that we can keep doing that by going to the phone and making your pledge of support. It's not somebody else's job to make that pledge. It's your job. 800-383-9772, securely online at WPR.org.
1-800-383-9772 is that number to call. You're hearing some phones ringing there. That's your friends and neighbors calling. And we're hoping that you'll join them. You know, we've been talking a little bit about the special qualities of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are a media outlet like many others that are out there. But part of what makes us special, especially during hours like Kathleen Dunn and Joy Cardine, Jean Faraca, is that you can actually just pick up the phone and talk to the voices that that you read in the paper or that you see quoted elsewhere who have books like Sarah Murray. You can pick up the phone and you can talk to Alice Walker. It's amazing. Or to New York Times columnists like Matt Bai and Paul Krugman, whom we had on this hour. It's an incredible two-way street here. We like to keep the avenues of dialogue open, and we know we all benefit from listening and talking and exchanging ideas with one another. And this is the time where we sort of ask you to have a Sally Field moment and tell us you like us, you really like us, and call us at 1-800-383-9772. Tell us you like the programming, tell us you like the guests, and tell us you like having the chance to talk to these amazing figures in our world today with your pledge of financial support.
And, you know, if you've never done it before, if you've never made a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, it's really a very simple process. The volunteers that are in the next room are members of Wisconsin Public Radio. They're volunteering their morning to help welcome you into the membership of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, it will make it easy and quick. You can use MasterCard or Visa or American Express or Discover. Or we can just send you something in the mail as a reminder, and you can send us a check. It's really up to you. You can use electronic funds transfer, which is a way of kind of a debit system for your checking account. Any way that you prefer will accommodate, because the important thing is that we have a goal during this pledge drive of 5,500 phone calls, and we're not halfway there yet. So your phone call, every phone call is important. And it doesn't matter how much you pledge. It matters that you do pledge. So some people come in at $120 because that's about our average pledge when you average the pledges out. And with that $120 pledge, you receive the member benefit card, or boost it up a little bit to $150 and get the member benefit card and the book Movable Feasts by Sarah Murray, the guest that we just heard. 1-800-383-9772.
800-383-9772. You listen, therefore you pledge. It's a pretty simple proposition. This is the honor system. We don't come and find you and ask you and knock on your door and ask you for money. This isn't an episode of The Simpsons. We go on the radio, and what we do is we expose you to the need. That's what we're doing here. We're letting you know what our needs are. It costs money to produce quality programming. We do it as efficiently as we can, but it still costs something. And what we're asking is that since you value quality, when you turn the radio on every day, you expect to hear great guests and strong interviews, and that's what you get here at Wisconsin Public Radio. You have that expectation. Well, in order to meet that expectation, we need you to become our partner. This is a partnership. It's a community, and everybody contributes something to it. We're asking you to contribute something right now at 800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
You listen to Wisconsin Public Radio because you're interested in learning about your world. You're interested in politics and world affairs and the arts and sciences and medicine, all of these amazing topics that you hear. But you should become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio because beyond being interested, you care. And when you really do let your emotions get involved and take a stand, in this case a financial stand, you find it's more rewarding. There's that much more investment and there's that much more sense of connection and the feeling that we're all in this together and we really are in this together. Your call helps become magic this hour. It actually turns us into radio shows and ISDN lines, and the list goes on and on and on. So do become a member and decide to care about Wisconsin Public Radio with a pledge of financial support this morning at 1-800-383-9772.
We really are all in this together, Veronica, and it is a partnership. It's a partnership between you and your public radio station, and we do our part of the bargain by providing programming. Anytime you tune in the radio, as Veronica said, you expect to hear us, and we're expecting to hear from you now too this morning. We have a goal of $9,000, a long way to go to make that goal, but phone call by phone call, that's how we make the goal. So your phone call is really important during this hour. WPR.org if you prefer not to use the phone, but if you use the phone, 1-800-383-9772. Join people like Barbara from Menominee Falls, who listens to us every day and loves the programming. Or Andrea and Peter from Marinette, who've been enjoying Wisconsin Public Radio for 30 years. How long have you been listening for? Have you listened to the Wisconsin School of the Air 30 years ago?
Or the March of Medicine. Let's drag out some really old shows.
Or letters from listeners. Let's hear from you. 1-800-383-9772. Or maybe you listen to Larry Mueller and the Farm Report. I remember that.
Maybe
I remember that, Larry.
Maybe we could get him to read the butter and egg prices today.
And the pork bellies.
Yeah, there we go.
1-800-383-9772. Larry Mueller standing by with I hear your show today is going to be a pain in the neck.
we're going to be talking about aches and pains and sprains and strains.
And neck pains, too.
Yeah, neck pains.
Well, Phil's getting some pain here right now because the phones aren't ringing. 800-383-9772, the number to call to make your pledge. Pledge $150 and get the book Movable Feasts. Find out how your food travels around the world before it gets to you and what happens to it on its journey. You had a chance to listen to the author and talk with her. And that's a unique thing about Wisconsin Public Radio. We've mentioned it before. You get to interact with some great guests. And Kathleen's had some very interesting people on over the years. I especially like her recent interview with Alan Alda. That was a great show. And people, you know, how often are you going to get a chance to call up and talk to Alan Alda? I mean, let's be real about this. It's not going to happen.
He'll never give me his phone number.
That's right. He's not, you know, he doesn't have me on speed dial either. So, you know, this is a chance for you to interact with some people who make decisions or they're decision makers or at least opinion makers, and you get a chance to let them know what you think. And it all works because you call us and make pledges of support. 800-383-9772 or securely online at WPR.org.
A couple minutes left to go in this hour. Of course, we invite you to pledge through the news. You can ask for the Sarah Murray book as your thank you gift when you pledge at $150. And we'll also send you the member benefit card, which gives you 2-for-1 dining benefits at over 200 restaurants. So a great deal there. The best deal, though, of course, is Wisconsin Public Radio. You support it because you believe in it, because you care, and, of course, because you listen. And we're so glad that you do. So thank you for all of your calls this hour. We really appreciate that. I've been joined by Phil Corvo and John Munson, and I thank the both of you, too.
You're welcome.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Veronica, because we believe in it. And if you do, too, 1-800-383-9772.
Thank you to Rhonda Fanning and Carmen Jackson, who produced this hour. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.